Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You think about the person in your life when you started believing you more than anyone else. They're the ones that made the sacrifices. When I walk out, my old man's next to me. They're not just looking at you. They're looking at what made you. I want them talking about our fucking game. I want them talking about us. All right, enjoy your lunch.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Buenos dias, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who is surprisingly well-rested. It's Nathan Lee Clark. Hello, Nathan.
That's me.
Nathan, you literally, for the first time ever, have just said to us, pre-pod, that you've had some good night's sleep.
Yeah, a couple in a row. That's, you know, getting a combination. It's like trying to get two or three good Spurs performances back-to-back over the last 5 years, you know what I mean? Like, they exist, but they're sometimes in a bit too isolated, you know what I mean?
I do. And we weren't expecting Bardi, so this is a bonus Bardi episode. I'm ready to clap back the haters.
Yeah, I got stuck. I tried to leave, but they just love me so much here that they wouldn't let me. So I'm here for another 2 days, which was an uncomfortable email to my manager to say, hey, I'm not going to be at work on Tuesday. So I'm still in Colombia.
Very nice. Well, let's start off with Bardi's haters, because there was a little bit of a lot of pushback against some of the big opinions expressed in the previous episode.
Can't say anything. You just literally, you can't say anything these days. You can't have an opinion because people just get so upset. And like, what's the point? What's the point of me here if I'm not going to give my opinion and be a bit honest on things? Because people get so upset. But anyway, you read out what they've got to say.
These days, if you say you want Ange Postecoglou out of your football club, they'll throw you in jail. So Rob Schmittigans said, well, actually, Rob sent a very long email. I'm going to summarize it in this particular paragraph, which is, I think, gets to the meat of his point. The negativity coming from the pod, brackets Bardi, is shocking. Specifically, Bardi said around the 40-27 mark, we need to start seeing some results. Bardi, my friend, the team has equaled their points and win total from last season with 6 games to play and has endured injuries to half of the key players in the team. Aaron Lickstrahl said, thank you again for a wonderful pod. I understand after a bad result there are going to be a lot of wide-ranging opinions, but I felt the need to give my opinion to you, whose opinion I value highly as a new American fan. The comparisons to Conte this week on the episode upset me. Us fans have been crying out loud for the identity of attacking front-foot football. We finally have a man who plays an unwavering style of football we've been asking for, and you're wanting to change how he plays? I'm not going to act like there aren't legitimate criticisms for fans to voice, but to not be even 1 year into rebuilding the squad and already hearing massive complaints just made my blood boil. Even with legitimate criticisms, I feel we can't make any long-term critiques when there are only about 5 players currently in our 25-man squad who are picked specifically for Ange Ball. And finally, Guy Wolf sent an email with the subject, a miserable Bardi. He says, big fan of the pod, and excuse my slightly flippant subject heading, but I wanted to ask Bardi, one, what were his actual expectations of Ange before the season? Apparently similar Conte vibes and need to start seeing results. yes, the league has been a bit favourable, but every season someone disappoints and we are undergoing perhaps the biggest evolution in the club's history on and off the pitch. Moving to attacking Ange Ball from Dier, Conte and Jose, defensiveness was always going to result in a few batterings. I'm here for it if the trajectory is enjoyable and Ange vibes. What did Bardi expect? 2, we should have sold Son after we won the Golden Boot. What? Should City flog Haaland now then? We must demonstrate ambition and hold on to our best players who continue to deliver despite Son's dips in form. I'm just a bit tired of reactionary fandom and basically just want to say, chill, Bardi. I love you, really. And we did have one email in support of Bardi's position. This was from Josh Emden, who said, I'm essentially starting to worry that even if we upgrade our squad for next season, that the system will actually hold us back. To be clear, I'm not splitting hairs over whether for the next few years we're a top 3 team or a top 5 team. I'm worried the system leaves us vulnerable to anywhere between 4th and 10th. I don't think it's too hard to imagine us having a season like Chelsea are having now, and some of the XG stats kind of back that up. Our attack is predictable and stodgy, with limited counter-pressing because we have no rest defence, so the ball comes back, and every time we lose it, our actual defending is bad. This feels like a lot for a few new players to fix. Gosh, lots of discourse you created, Bardi.
Yeah, let me just bury the first point, the easiest one that's there. So, should we have sold Son after he won the Golden Boot? And should City sell Haaland? Well, City should obviously not sell Haaland because he's like, what, how was he, 23, 24? He's still not at his peak yet, whereas Son is a player who relies heavily on his pace. He's approaching his mid-30s. So, yes, we should sell Son, and it's very different from Haaland. So, thank you very much for your email, Guy, but I disagree with that opinion there. And I'm pretty sure Nathan would back me up with there. But all of this is just, you're allowed to question a manager. You're allowed to question what's happening. And we're now into end of April and 2024 has been pretty bad. You know, there's been some really bad results and there's been some results where we've kind of scraped through. So we're allowed to ask these questions and criticize Postecoglou. And always it comes back to like, oh, but you're comparing it to Conte, you know, comparing it to this, you're defending Conte. I really don't give a fuck about Antonio Conte. I liked Conte and I thought he was a good manager, but now he's gone, he's dead to me. Also, you can't compare anything to Conte's last season because that was just a mess from the start to finish. He left in, I don't know whether he left in January. After that, we had the geniuses Stellini and Mason lead us through to the summer. So I don't think you can compare. You can't say this season's better because of what we did last season. Last season is a mess. But I think you're allowed to question Postecoglou. You're allowed to ask where we're going. He had a good start, but since January, it's been pretty bad. And there are very similar Conte vibes, not so much as off the pitch or when a microphone's pushed in their face, but this kind of rigidity to stick to one system that it's not working that well, but we continue to play it, we continue to do it. And attacking front foot football, I don't know, man. If attacking front foot football means we get smacked by Fulham, Newcastle, Wolves, then I'm not sure that is the football that we all kind of want, if you see what I mean.
Do you want to go first, Nathan?
I think I want to reveal a little behind the curtain rather than tackle Bardi head on, at least for now, and we'll spread it out. So I disagree with Bardi a lot on this issue. I disagree with Bardi a lot often, right? And I just want to say that, like, that's a deliberate thing that we seek on this podcast so that we can have a back and forth conversation so that we can, consider different opinions from across the Spurs fan base so that we can talk it out. So if Bardi says something that you disagree with, or I say something that you disagree with, or Whitney says something that you disagree with, please don't be so upset by that, because we go to some effort to remain non-homogenous in how we feel so that we can talk about how, and the thing is, when Bardi says something that upsets you, someone else is listening to the podcast and going, yes, finally someone's saying it right. I'm so sick of these fucking bald soy boys whining away or whatever, right? So I consider it a strength of our podcast. And although, again, I often disagree with Bardi, I'm very glad that he's here so we can have the back and forth. So, yeah, let's try and have that back and forth.
Yeah, quite. I think, I enjoy the fact that we get emails from our listeners. I've mentioned it many times. Sure. Like, it's really appreciated. And also, I think the fact that people want to talk to us says a lot about our podcast. Like, people want to communicate and have a back and forth. And I appreciate that and I enjoy that. And I don't feel a need to defend Bardi's position in the same way that I don't feel a need to defend my position or Nathan's position by email, because we're our own individuals and there's no groupthink here, I don't think. And also, there's also no right way of thinking about this. Like, we're all coming at this from different perspectives. We all want different things, slightly. I mean, broadly, we want Spurs to do well is the key. But, like, where we are on the spectrum of, let's say that, like, winning is on one side of the spectrum and having fun is on the other, we're all at different points along that line. And Bardi, being the most competitive man I've ever met in my 40 years on this planet, is definitely more towards the winning end of that line. And I am more, as I get older especially, more towards the having fun end of that line. And so, yeah, we are coming at this from slightly different perspectives. But also, like, I think under Ange, there's as good a chance of winning as we've had in decades. It's just that, like, again, we're assessing it from different viewpoints. I'm seeing potential, Bardi's seeing flaws. I'm seeing room to build, room to grow, and Bardi's seeing warning signs. And we won't know which of us is right until 2 years down the line. Maybe longer, because we don't know how long Ange will stay. And so at the moment, it's just about kind of talking it out and rationalizing the situation we're in, and also like having fun along the way and hoping for the best. Like, part of the joy of being a Spurs fan or being a football fan more generally is the hope, isn't it? It's the squinting and hoping you can see some success coming in the near future, and enjoying the journey of getting there. And I feel like we're in that position right now. I feel very optimistic about the future. I feel like this has been a solid first season, way beyond my expectations from the beginning of the season. But you know, by the point we were at just before the Chelsea game, or even 20 minutes into the Chelsea game, like, yeah, I'm a little disappointed with how it's gone since then. And I think that is a reasonable position to take. Like, broad strokes, very delighted. Post-Chelsea, slightly disappointed. And I think, like, for Bardi to be a little bit more on the questioning side because of everything that's happened since then is a reasonable position to take. It's not like he's saying, sack Ange, move on from him. That is absolutely not the gist of the point. It's just, I think I'm putting words in his mouth now. It's just that there are some red flags. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'm not chasing Ange out or anything else like that. He deserves time and he should get time because there are promising signs. But I just think since the turn of the year, there's things have happened on the pitch that just haven't been great. And I just feel all of this is just kind of looked over by a majority of our fan base because of vibes, because he says nice things, and because we feel a connection. Because it's true, there are some wonderful players at this club, man. Destiny, Van de Ven, Vicario. These are characters that you can see you've got to grow and become favourites. And I just think because we've got these really nice players and because we've got this really nice manager, all of a sudden we're just kind of taking our eye off what really matters. And I think we need to finish top four. And I know quite often everyone's like, oh, but it doesn't really matter. I think it does. I think for us financially, and I think for us as a club, we need to get back in top four. And I think that would be a really impressive first season. And it's just slipping. It's just moving away. This is an incredible opportunity. Newcastle, Man U, Chelsea, they've all been off it this year. Villa have had a good season, but they haven't had an outstanding season. They've been battered a few times. We've battered them. And I just think that fourth place should be ours. And I'm disappointed at some of the results recently. And I think it's fair to question his methods in the same way that we've questioned many managers before him. And also, I do think he's been backed a lot more than previous managers have. And I think obviously this has got to do with the fact that a lot of our players just ended. Their careers just finished and we needed to replace them anyway. But I do think we should be seeing a little bit more from Spurs, especially now. We always thought it was going to be a tough start for Postecoglou, but the start turned out to be brilliant. And now this middle chunk has been a bit sticky.
Sorry, go on, Nathan.
Well, I think that it's on that last point about being backed is where we really strongly disagree. Mm. Because I think that, and Wendy's made this point before, if Conte or Mourinho had lost Kane and received a couple of 22-year-olds, things would have been flames, as they eventually did for each coach, regardless. And I think immediately, I think that, you know, Van de Ven defending his own box, or match would have been, people would have very, very different opinions on Van de Ven as a defender. I think Udogie being stuck out wide, tasked with whipping in crosses, would be a terrible, terrible use of him. And I even wonder if the two of them would have seen the pitch in the first place. We know, for example, Saar wasn't seeing the pitch in a similar scenario. So I do kind of agree that Ange has been backed in terms of he's been backed very efficiently, very well. We're utilizing database recruitment, but part of that is because of Postecoglou being happy and comfortable with those things, liking young players coming in, allowing recruitment to not just be him bringing in 31-year-olds on £250,000 a week because he's worked with them before. Right, those two things are very much hand in hand. So yes, he's been backed better, but that's because that's a strength of his own. And also I'll add like a strength that he has over Pochettino, for example, who got in the way of his own backing, you know?
I do think, I mean, now we're doing hypotheticals. I do believe that Conte would have played, he would have played Destiny over Sessegnon, just literally because
he's Italian.
Yes, probably. And also, he was pretty good for Udinese. He did some, his numbers were good for Udinese in that kind of, the way he didn't play left back in that left wing, left wing back role. I think he would have been fine doing. I think he's a good enough player to have been great in that role. I think our big question over Destiny at the start of the season was, could he come inside and do it? And he has done that because he's a brilliant footballer. So I think he would have blossomed in every single position. And I do think had Conte had a full season with a settled Porro, I think we would have seen a far better attacking output than us having to rely all the time on Emerson at right wing back. So I do think Postecoglou has had the advantage of these two brilliant wingbacks slash fullbacks that he's done. But he's done an amazing job with them. Yeah, and I always end up defending Conte, and I don't want to defend Conte because I don't like him, and I've never liked him. But when he came to Spurs, I was super excited. He's always been an arsehole, and I'm still talking about Conte, Jesus. But I do, I want to see a bit more from Postecoglou. I think he's got an opportunity right now to do something incredible against Arsenal. If we beat Arsenal, then I'll kind of forgive him the early cup exits, because that is something that we can look at and then build towards. And I just think this season we've had moments where we just could have, it needed some stake in the ground to say, look, this is where we are and this is where we're going. And I think it's been too, the results have been too mixed for me to really have faith that this is really working. But I'm still reiterating, I don't want him sacked. I just want to see an improvement. And I think we've gone backwards since the start of the year. There's a few players out there right now who are treading water, Bissouma, Maddison.
Just on the point about Postecoglou being backed and Conte not, I think that is not Conte's fault, and also not necessarily anything to do with Postecoglou, and more to do with the club fucking up the appointments and not being true to their strategy, and now they're back on track. Because the players we've signed for Postecoglou will outlive him and will be suitable for the next manager. And I think that is the right approach from the club. And I'm glad we found our way back there. But you can see why, like, we didn't spend 50 million on a 31-year-old like Nathan was suggesting, like, that Conte might have been asking for. That wouldn't have been business savvy. That wouldn't have been a sensible approach.
Like, spent £60 million on Richarlison.
Like, I'm not going to complain about that. I like Richarlison, and I think he has value beyond what he has been worth so far. The idea was that Conte is a win now manager. You back him and you win something straight away. And I kind of told myself that, like, yes, while we've got Kane, we suck that up. We get the job done. We bring in some key players. But, you know, bigger picture, it was stepping away from a tried and trusted strategy. And yeah, very happy we found our way back to it. There's one other thing that Bardi mentioned that I just want to tweak at a little bit. And that is the idea that we kind of let Ange off the hook more because he's a good bloke, because the vibes are good. And I think there is truth in that. And I think it's right that there's truth in that. I think Conte, he wasn't just fired because of what was happening on the pitch. Conte talked himself out of a job. Like, Conte was over it. He got himself fired deliberately, I think. He blew up the house. Ange is, so far, such a good person, such a good egg, such a good leader. He makes you feel like we're moving in the right direction as a collective. And I think that is worth investing in. And I think it means that even if things aren't perfect on the pitch, he gets a little bit more leeway. Like he deserves to be given more of a chance because he's not going to throw the club under the bus in the same way that Conte did. And I'm willing, like, if things are worse than they are now, and we were genuinely talking about, like, do we move on? Because let's say we were 10th. Let's say we were having Chelsea's season in terms of points. And things have been a bit disastrous and, like, our Son's not scoring or whatever. I'd be way more willing to back Ange because he's Ange, personally. And I think that is right. What do you guys think?
I agree with you. I've said it a few times. He's a good person, and when results don't go bad, he takes the blame, and it's his fault. When we played that high line against Chelsea, it was suicidal, and it didn't work for us. It was bad, but he was the person that took the fall for it instead of blaming the players. And you know, it's a good quality to have, and it makes things nice and it makes things easier for us. But I don't know. Sometimes I just want him to get a bit angry and just let loose a little bit. Stop being so nice to the players. But maybe that's just my personality. You can't keep, as a manager, you can't keep taking the blame for bad results. You can't keep taking that. At some point, there needs to be, otherwise you just get fired. We just fire him. Okay, Ange, it's not the players, it's you, mate. We're not winning games, so we need to replace you. So there is a little bit there. He's a nice guy, which is great, but yeah, I feel like I'm shitting on him. I'm not, but yeah, he does get away with a lot of stuff because he's really good in press conferences.
Yeah, I agree with Windy that his character is a legitimate strength. Him talking well matters, and also means that he's talking to the players well and fostering a good attitude, you know, in the dressing room, and those are good things on their own merit. It's like, Kyle Walker was bad defensively, but he gets away with it because of his pace. It's like, well, that's an attribute that he has.
Yeah.
Son's got a dog shit first touch, but he gets away with it because he scores bangers and is good for like 15 plus goals every season, right? It's the same thing. Players and coaches have strengths and weaknesses, and Postecoglou's personality is a strength of his rather than just getting away with things.
But I'd rather he was a little bit more of an asshole, but quicker at making subs. You know, I'd rather he got upset sometimes in a press conference, but then was able to adjust something quicker on the pitch. I think a lot of times he struggles to turn games to his favor. You know, we talk about managers that are able just to see something happening and make a change and then just turn. I don't know, maybe I can't think of a moment, but I've not seen a moment this season where he's done something and the game has spun. I know we've come from behind a few times, but I haven't seen that nous from him, or that moment, or that kind of elite level manager moment from him.
Well, there were a couple of times earlier in the season where he switched from 4-3-3 to a 4-2-3-1, mm-hmm. the double pivot, and it made a massive difference. And I was watching the Newcastle game thinking, why haven't you done what you always do, which is go to a 4-2-3-1? And I guess it's because, like, he didn't want to clutter up the midfield even more than it already was with the way Newcastle were pressing. Maybe. I don't know.
I don't think good. Because they were the whole thing is that, like, our build-up is very variable and dynamic. Sometimes we build with the two, sometimes we build with the one, sometimes the fullbacks are wide, sometimes the narrow, sometimes it's deep, sometimes the high. The way you get around that, what teams have worked out and what Newcastle implemented to a greater extreme, is just attach a man to each of those players and just follow them around everywhere. Yeah. So if you change from a one to a two, it doesn't really change anything.
You know, when we drew 3-3 with City, and we had a defence of fullbacks and then a midfield that wasn't quite right, he started Brian Hill, and we got that result with him making changes. I thought this is incredible. And that was perhaps the moment where I thought this guy is going to be elite. But since then I haven't felt like he's managed or manipulated a game that, and he's just bent it towards his will. There's been moments in games or periods where we've just gone out and just bang, 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 just done something. Brentford was one.
Well, that's it in action.
Yeah.
That's him making changes in action and those things happening. Okay, sometimes it's the opposition to come out to press, and that's not anything that we've done, but that's sticking to our guns there. But then, like, only as recently as the Luton game, we subbed on Brennan Johnson at halftime for Kulusevski and changed the game that way.
That's true, but it always seems to be against the kind of lower end teams. You see,
okay,
against the lower end teams, these are teams that, like, throughout the season shows they are where they are because they're unable to sustain something or do something. There's just been too many moments where I've just felt Spurs haven't taken a stranglehold of a game and just suffocated them, because the whole way we play is the attacking movement, and it's just never felt that we've just got a team by the scruff of the neck and just held them there, and never, they've not got any opportunity. Arsenal, for whatever they do, do you have faith that they're not really going to concede too many goals and they're just going to just see out the game? I just feel we concede too many shots, we give up too many chances, and our attacking front foot football is perhaps not as attacking and as excited or as glorious as we all tend to believe. And these are just questions that I think we should all ponder and have and just think about sometimes, rather than just always just backing Ange or just blindly going, oh yeah, Postecoglou's the best thing that's ever happened to Spurs for ages.
Well, we've got 4 out of 5 really tricky games coming up, so maybe it'll put your theory to a test. Maybe we'll get to see, like, how he manipulates things against better sides, whether he's able to change things to our advantage in some of those games. But this comes nicely onto Nathan's video released this week about some possible automations that could be used to unlock our build-up play, I suppose, where teams go man for man.
Yeah, so just discussed, like, our strength in build-up is our variability. That means that the weakness is man-to-man marking. But I take an optimistic view there, because when you're marked man-to-man, it's very easy to dictate that you tell your opponents where they're standing, right? And when you can do that, it opens up so much possibility for so many different ideas. And I was made aware of tacticalboards.com, which apparently I should have known about for a long time, which is a lot easier than trying to set up my whiteboard and get my camera pointing at my whiteboard and move things around manually and draw lines with my medically bad handwriting. I have an actual, it's called dysgraphia, right? It's, you know, dyslexia? I've got dysgraphia. It's a real thing.
I thought you meant you had handwriting that was so bad it was like a doctor's handwriting, because, you know, they're famously terrible.
It works both ways. Yeah. Dysgraphia, very common in the medical practice, I think. So I had a little play around with some various ideas. How you actually coach those would be sort of an interesting next step. But I think that
I can put
mostly
that to Chris in our straight off the training ground episode.
So this comes back to the whole thing about Eric Dyer, right? About the discussion about not teaching tactics. So he would probably recognize if we did a get the cones out, 11v0, here's the play, right? But I think Ange's way of doing things, okay, we might do a little bit of that. Ange's way of doing things is, here's a bunch of drills that teaches you unconsciously to find the third man, right? So we're doing this movement's happening here. You in the middle are playing a one-touch pass around the corner, so that we find those solutions live, right? So that we make those movements off the cuff and improvise and rotate that way, rather than, okay, we've got this team next, they man-to-man press, therefore we should be looking for Romero as the third man. Let's instill the ideas of those kinds of plays through our small-sided 5v5, 4v4, 3v3 little practice games, circuits, and that's how we will bring that into the game. But I would definitely, I think, if we're expecting more teams to set up this way, and Arsenal are going to set up something like this to say, okay, here's this specific move for finding Romero spare, here's this specific move for finding Porro spare, and then we can play that quick ball in behind because we've got a 3v3 on the halfway line. So I ran through a bunch of ways of doing that in theory.
And shout out to your wife who made a cameo.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're a long-time listener, you might know I've been drinking AG1 for quite some time. Some of you may know I've been on the road for a while. Milan, Madrid, and now I'm stuck in Medellin after they cancelled my flight. During these past couple of weeks, I've been relaxing after a hard block of marathon training, enjoying different food and drink, but that doesn't mean I've stopped my routines. I may not be running as hard, but I'm sticking to my fundamentals and taking my AG1. You see, it's so easy to travel with AG1. Of course, I've not been trying to get in and out of Colombia with a canister full of green powder. I've been sensible and saved space in my luggage by carrying my travel sachets and, of course, my little bottle of vitamin D. That means no matter where I am, what I'm doing or what I'm eating, I keep it topped up with my vitamins. Sure, at some hotel breakfast, I've had some strange stares, but keeping on top of everything, especially when you're traveling, is important and worth the confused looks. Having a solid routine is important to me, and AG1 helps me do this. Now, adios, my friends. Hopefully, I'll be back in time to watch the North London Derby.
If there's one product we had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why we partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase, exclusively at drinkag1.com/extra inch. That's drinkag1.com/extra inch. Check it out. So, you won't believe this, but we have a second Bergvall correspondent, a rival correspondent. So this is Eric S. Thank you, Eric, for your Bergvall insights. Eric says, just to share a bit of a reality check on Bergvall, he had a nightmare of a game against AIK in the derby today, gave away one goal, but he did do some ineffective back heels and hair flicks, to be fair, and he was terrible while pressed. And our original correspondent, Peter Strom, has also been in touch. He said, tough game this weekend, a derby versus AIK, where they managed to get the win at home. AIK won 2-0. Lucas did a lot of great moves a bit further down the pitch. Usually he got out of trouble, but he lost it for the second goal and he tried to be a bit overzealous. Those things can happen, and I do believe that Andrew would have loved that he tried to make a spin and then move away from the opposition. On the whole, a derby is a derby and a draw would have been fair. A great interview this week as well. His coaches thought that it would have been tough for Lucas to focus on his game after signing for Tottenham, but it was the other way around, and they're very happy that he managed to sign and then get back to business so quickly. The media says that he's one of the standouts from the league so far. Both them and Lucas feel that the opposition targets him more than before, which is interesting. His coach continues, Lucas is tough, but mentally and physically, he gets a hit, but he just gets up again and continues. This makes him stronger and he works on different ways to make him and the team better. We're very happy so far.
That's like me and you, Wind. It's like I'm Eric S and you're Peter. Like, Eric is like, it's rubbish, he keeps flicking his hair, and whereas Peter's far more positive and optimistic.
It's really, really useful to have these insights on Bova. And I keep seeing like clips of him on social media as well, and I must admit I'm starting to get a bit excited and looking forward to seeing him in pre-season for sure. We talked a bit about Udogie in the first half, and we find out that he has got injured in training. He's had to have surgery, and he's going to miss the rest of the season, which is a pity. And the Euros, yeah, which sucks for him, right?
Yeah, I'm not happy, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, do you think he would have started for Italy?
No, but he would have been an excellent rotation option with DiMarco. Just kind of swapping one for one, it would have been great. But it's bad for him. It's bad for the rest of our season. When Italy's
really bad.
Yeah, Italy's the summer. I'll worry about that then. But for now, this is not good. And it's a shame it's happened.
Nathan, really bad. Why is that?
Because we don't have a suitable backup to him at all in our squad. And that isn't a criticism of Ben Davies, because I've actually not minded Ben Davies at left centre back too much. But the specific role of left back is essentially a midfielder, right, in our system. And that's difficult for Davies. I mean, there was the winning goal against Brighton. Davies came on in that role, played a nice pass. He's going to spray it about a little better from that position than Udogie is. But yeah, really lacks the carrying game. That's been pretty important to us.
Undoubtedly lacks the carrying game. Undoubtedly lacks the kind of the incredible defensive duel aspect.
Yeah.
Lacks the recovery pace.
Recovery, big time.
but
yeah.
I feel okay about Davis stepping in for a few games. Do you know what? I've loved Udogie. I think he's had a great first season. Such a young player. he's settled in like he's always been a Premier League player, and that is an absolute treat. I mean, we're very fortunate that he's taken to it as he has. But he's got weaker as the season's gone on, in my opinion. I think his form's dropped. I think Werner coming in has exposed what Udogie's big weakness is, which is the inability to play an early pass down the line. And I think Ben Davis will do that better. Coupled with his natural, more conservative play, I think low-key it might be quite helpful to have a more defensive left-back for these next few games. I'm not saying that I'm going to like want Davis receiving in pockets like I want Udogie receiving in pockets in build-up, but if he's naturally hanging back a little bit and maybe we find other solutions, I'm not against it. I'm fine with Davis stepping in for a few games. I've just said that I think he'll unlock Werner. The one fly in that particular ointment, I think, is Richarlison is back. Werner missed some good chances in the last game. I reckon there's every chance we push Son wide against Arsenal and play Richarlison through the middle, and that means Werner will be on the bench, in which case you don't benefit from the early Davis ball to Werner. But maybe the early ball to Son will allow Son to kind of pick up the ball, step inside and get some shots away. So I'm not too worried. I'm more worried about Pedro Porro.
Yeah, I agree with you, Windy. I think the kind of qualities that Davies has will be all right. And it is that early pass down the line to Werner, which is on quite often, that Destiny just doesn't play. So I think that will be all right. I think we'll be okay there. I think we'll start with Son through the middle against Arsenal, then Werner and Johnson wide. I think that's what we'll do for that game. But Destiny is an incredible player, with incredible potential, but he has been a little bit off the boil. And I have faith in Davies. Davies has never really let Spurs down. He'll step in and be, you know, steady Eddie, dependable Ben, and he'll will be all right that side.
The thing is, Udogie's form dropping is, I think, because we don't have a viable backup. And I'm saying exactly. Davies will do a job now, but if Davies were a better player, it wouldn't have, or a more suited player, I should say, because I think, like Nathan said, he did a really good job at left centre back. But if he was a better inverted left back, it probably would have meant that Udogie would have had spells in and out of the team and wouldn't have dropped off so significantly, in my opinion.
Yeah, I suspect that Udogie's lesser performances of recent times and him getting a muscle injury, a soft tissue injury at least, now is probably, I suspect, somewhat related. And look, we haven't been in Europe this season, right? We are out of cups in each case relatively early. But that fullback role is a hell of a lot of work. Mm. And so we've got to have depth there next season. Because, yeah, I think both of them, him and Porro, have been struggling with fatigue.
Absolutely. We'll get a lot of pushback because we always do. And people will say, they've only been playing one game a week. What's the problem? Any footballer should be able to play one game a week. The point I always make in response to that is we play one of the most intense brands of football in Europe. And it's not just playing that way, it's training that way as well. And that puts a lot of stress on the body. And to be able to manage that one game a week, two games a week or otherwise, you need to have depth. And we just haven't had it this year. One of my biggest criticisms of Ange has been the lack of rotation. I think it's been a problem. I think it's been a problem in terms of allowing players to drop out of form, but also allowing players to pick up injuries. And, you know, I've said it many times, I wish he'd played a few more young players. I wish he'd indoctrinated Donnelly earlier into the style and got him involved. I think that would have really helped. But the same for several other young players, Santiago's another. And I think he could have helped himself in the long term, but, you know, you can't have it all. We got this email from James Hopkin, who says, there's three questions in one. He says, firstly, are corners the new back pass to Lloris? I'm terrified every time. Seeing how poor our attacking corners are, maybe we just don't have anyone who can swing one in under the bar, so they don't get to practice defending them in training, which is an interesting point. Secondly, why do we insist on playing through the middle of a packed box instead of getting wide when trying to break a team down? Every ball in the last third comes inside from one person standing still to another standing still. And third, more importantly, and TEI adjacent, Maddison needs to get over himself and shave his head. The comb over is holding him back.
Oh, is he thin on top? I hadn't noticed.
Yeah, you won't help but notice now. Now you've been told you will look out for the the matters comb over. Yeah,
join us, James. Join us.
It's a life changing okay. move.
So reverse order. Yeah, do it. Shave it off. Join the gang. Get a Spurs tattoo on your bald head like that. One bloke. Why do we insist on playing through the middle of a packed box? Because we don't have the 1v1 quality in wide areas. And if we were to bring that in, could you tell where that was going?
Yeah.
If we were to bring that in the summer, then that would really help open up the area in the middle. Corners I want to talk about. So I wasn't sure which video I should do, whether I should do the one about dealing with the man-to-man press or I should do the corners one. And then it turns out that the more popular one, which was the automations against the man-to-man press, was much quicker and easier to do than I thought. So I have started work on a video about defensive corners, which I'll be hopefully doing either this week or next week, getting that out and editing it. Yeah, they're pretty bad, basically. and spoiler alert, they've been bad for a very long time.
Well, our corners have been bad for a long time.
Our defensive corners. Our defensive. Their corners, yeah. I haven't done the video yet, but I think I'm leaning fairly heavily towards defending Mile Jedinak, basically.
Wow. Wow. There's been a lot of discourse around how we improve our set pieces.
Mm.
Do we hire a set piece coach or do we buy taller players? And my answer is both. I think I do think we have to prioritize some tall players amongst our summer signings. I want to do a bit of a section, maybe in the next pod, maybe the one after, about the homegrown rules and the impact that has on summer signings we can make, because it is going to have a significant impact. Like we are restricted in the number of players we can buy unless they're homegrown, basically. And that makes you think, okay, so maybe we should consider Kyle Walker-Peters, because not only is he homegrown, he's also club trained. Massive bonus for UEFA competitions. But he's also small. We've already got like Porro, who is a small fullback. Do we want another small fullback when we're really struggling with height in our own penalty area? I don't know. I think it's a trade-off that we need to consider. I think there's something there that we need to think about. Obviously the same applies to Marcus Edwards, like benefits of signing him, club trained, but tiny. Probably also plays on the wrong side for what we need. But there's all these things to take into consideration.
Do you know that there was an article in the Liverpool Echo written last autumn, September time, and we are the fourth tallest team on average in the Premier League, which is really surprising. Wow. But I have a funny feeling most of that is big Fraser Forster. He's doing some big things there. Whereas Man City are technically, on average, one of the shortest teams in the Premier League, which doesn't make sense because they seem to have giants playing the whole time. So
that's changed now for sure. Like when you look at their back line.
Well, this was September. This was September 2023. So it wasn't that. Okay. It was within this summer's transfer window. And I just think what City have done is they do have a lot of little players, but just their back four, when they put out their back four and Rodri, they're all big units, and then they've let all the forward.
Haaland.
And Haaland, but then everyone else is just tiny. So they've gone technically good and massive in certain areas, and then just other areas, they're just not too bothered about it. I think with Spurs, we seem to be little in obviously in defensive areas as well. But it does feel to me like we are a very short team, despite what the stats say.
Yeah, like there's another point as well, isn't there, that Van de Ven is tall of body and short of mind, and Nathan Ake is short of body and tall of mind. Like Ake jumps and headers like he's a 6'4" giant. Van de Ven doesn't get off the ground, basically. I would trust Ake to clear a ball way more than I would trust Van de Ven, and yet there is a discrepancy in the height.
Do you know who the smallest team in the Premier League is on average? Can you guess?
Is it obvious?
I think it might be. Well, it's not obvious. And once you know it, you're like, oh, yeah, of course, that makes total sense. No, it's Brighton. Brighton at 177. Now, as soon as you say it, I can see you all nodding. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is on Twitter as well. It's been confirmed as well. Anything can get confirmed on Twitter. It's Everton, Forest, Spurs, Newcastle, Palace, Liverpool. Those are top teams.
There's a methodological issue there because you should be taking your heights from the minutes that are played rather than the squad, because it doesn't matter that Fraser Forster is two entire in CISOs. You know, when only one of them sees the pitch.
Yeah,
for sure. We'll end on this one. This is from Sammy Schrester, who is a massive fan of Nathan. Very sweet email. A question for the pod: if you ever happen to have time, well, now in a week where we don't have a game, is the time, Sammy? Are any of you big readers, specifically of fantasy and or sci-fi? I'm a big fantasy fan. I'd love your recommendations. If you have any recommendations for books of any kind, are welcome too, of course. My favorite of all time is the Broken Earth trilogy by N.K. Jemisin. Now, I feel like this is a question written for Bardi.
Yeah, I mean, I spent all my life avoiding reading Dune, and then I decided to, my wife bought me a copy of it to read on holiday, and it's been miles. It's been so good. And I don't know why I'm just such a dickhead sometimes. I just refuse to read it because everyone else has read it. But I've been really enjoying that. You know, if you kind of want to get into science fiction, the Ender trilogy is pretty good as well. If you've got a lot of time on your hand and you want many years to spend reading science fiction, there's the Wheel of Time series, which Amazon have actually turned into a pretty good TV show. It's such an
it's a controversial take.
I thought season one was average, but I thought season two was excellent. So they've really done a good job with what is incredibly messy, which is an incredible universe to try and push into a TV show. And then, of course, there's any kind of Ian M. Banks books are always good ones. His early stuff is especially good for sci-fi.
Nice.
Yeah, I am still sort of working my way through all of the big obvious classic sci-fi. So I'm audiobooking Dune right now. I can't really read. I have to audiobook. It's an attention span thing. I audiobook while I'm jogging. I'm partway through the second Dune book. But yeah, I don't have great recommendations for sort of the more obscure stuff. I quite liked Magician by Raymond E. Feist. I don't know how obscure that is, but I feel like more obscure than Dune or A Song of Ice and Fire. And when we see this email before, I said, like, mainly I listen to analysis of unwritten series about where those series could potentially be going rather than moving on and starting another series.
I think what really helps as well, so A Song of Ice and Fire obviously it follows Game of Thrones, but there's real big differences. But when you've got such an expansive universe with loads and loads of characters, sometimes it's quite useful to have the kind of background knowledge of the TV show to help you kind of put faces to names and understand geography and everything else like that. But I highly recommend that to people because it's such a good and nice read.
I tell you what, rather than starting George R. Martin's unfinished, likely to be remaining forever unfinished series, go back and read some of his sort of 70s and 80s sci-fi short stories. Really good, really fun. And also, if you are an existing Song of Ice and Fire nerd, some pretty significant clues as to where things might be going in the Song of Ice and Fire series.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I'm like Nathan in terms of the attention span, so I struggle to read, except when I'm on holiday, and I'm going on holiday next month. So my holiday reading is currently being planned. I did order the book that a listener recommended. I'm so sorry, I can't remember who it was right now, but it's called And How Does That Make You Feel? Everything You Wanted to Know About Therapy by Joshua Fletcher. So I'm looking forward to reading that on holiday. I've also got, this is so basic, but I've got the latest in the series of Richard Osman Thursday Murder Club books, which are really fun and easy to read. I'll blast through that in a day or so on holiday. And also I have a book for expectant fathers because we're expecting a baby in September. So I'm kind of swatting up on everything I might need to know to support my wife through the end of pregnancy and then for the first few weeks of fatherhood. So that's exciting too.
We couldn't talk about books if I didn't mention Gareth Dace's book, or Is Gascoigne Going to Have a Crack? He's written a book about Spurs in the 90s. I feature in it. He interviewed me, and some of my memories and thoughts are in that book as well, along with some other kind of Spurs podcast faces as well. So I think that's out for pre-order now. And I'll be interviewing Gareth in the next couple of weeks to talk about his book a little bit more.
Nice. Sounds awesome. Right, let's leave it there. We've got obviously a massive, massive game to come at the weekend on Sunday against Arsenal. God knows what mood we're going to be in come next Monday. I'm hoping for the best, preparing myself for the worst. And I'm going to need some alcohol to get through it, I think.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Barney, and our tactics guy, Nate Clark. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at TheExtraInch. Email us at podcast@TheExtraInch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs, we love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.